agreed Celeste. She was on her third. All her feelings, even her thumping fear, were nicely coated in fluffy cotton wool. Jane breathed in deeply. I think the rain is finally stopping. It smells nice, all salty and fresh. She moved to the balcony edge and put her hand on the wet railing. She looked out at the rainy night. She seemed exhilarated. It smelled damp and swampy to Celeste. "I have to tell you something," said Celeste. Jane smiled. "Okay." She was wearing red lipstick, Celeste noticed. Madeline would be thrilled. Just before we left tonight, Josh came and told me that it's Max who has been bullying Amabella, not Ziggy. I was horrified. "I'm sorry. I'm so, so sorry." She looked up and saw Harper coming out onto the balcony, rummaging in her bag. Harper glanced their way and quickly clip-clopped up the other end, out of earshot, where she lit up a cigarette. "I know," said Jane.
"You know?"
Celeste took a step back and nearly slipped on the tile. "Ziggy told me yesterday," said Jane. "Apparently Amabella told him and asked him to keep it a secret." "Don't worry about it. It's all okay." "It's not okay. You've had to put up with that terrible petition. And people like her." Celeste nodded her head in Harper's direction. "And poor little Ziggy. And parents saying their kids couldn't play with him. I'm going to tell Renata tonight. And Miss Barnes. And Mrs. Lipman. I'm going to tell everyone. I might get up and make a public announcement. You got the wrong kid." "You don't have to do that," said Jane. "It's fine. It will all get sorted out." "I'm just so terribly sorry," said Celeste again, and her voice shook. She was thinking now of Saxon Banks. "Hey," said Jane. She put her hand on Celeste's arm. "It's fine. It will all get sorted out. It's not your fault." "No, but in a way it is my fault," said Celeste. "It couldn't possibly be," said Jane firmly. "Could we join you?" The glass door slid open. It was Nathan and Bonnie. Bonnie looked as she always did, and Nathan was dressed in a less expensive-looking version of Perry's outfit, except that he'd taken his black wig off and was twirling it around on his fist like a puppet. Celeste knew she was obliged to dislike Nathan and Bonnie on Madeline's behalf, but it was difficult at times. They both seemed so harmless and eager to please, and Skye was such a sweet little girl. Oh, God. She'd forgotten. Josh said Max had pushed Skye down the stairs again. He'd moved on to a new victim. She had to say something. I found out tonight that my son Max has been bullying some of the little girls in his class. I think he might have pushed your daughter on the stairs, more than once," she said. She could feel her cheeks burning. I'm so sorry. I only just..." "It's all right," said Bonnie calmly. "Skye told me about it. We discussed some strategies for what to do if this sort of thing happens again." "Strategies," thought Celeste bleakly. "She sounds like Susie, as though Skye were a domestic violence victim." She watched Harper stub out her cigarette on the wet balcony railing and then carefully wrap it up in tissue before hurrying off inside, ostentatiously not looking their way. We did actually email Miss Barnes today to tell her about it, said Nathan earnestly. I hope you don't mind, but Skye is painfully shy and has difficulty asserting herself, so we wanted her to keep an eye on things. And, of course, it's up to the teacher to sort these things out. I think that's the school policy. Let the teachers handle it. We would never have approached you about it.
Oh, said Celeste. Well, thank you. Again, I'm just so sorry.
No need to be sorry. Gosh, they're kids, said Nathan. They've got to learn all this stuff. Don't hit your friends. Stand up for yourself. How to be a grown-up.
How to be a grown-up, repeated Celeste shakily.
Still learning myself, of course, said Nathan.
It's all part of their emotional and spiritual development, said Bonnie.
There's some book along those lines, isn't there? Said Jane. Something like, everything you need to know you learned in kindergarten. Don't be mean, play nicely, share your toys.
Sharing is caring, quoted Nathan,
and they all laughed at the familiar line. Detective Sergeant Adrian Quinlan.
8 people, including the victim, were on the balcony at the time of the incident. We know who they are. They know who they are, and they know what they saw. Telling the truth is the most important thing a witness has to do.
Chapter 75. Madeline was trapped in a passionate conversation with some Year 2 parents about bathroom renovations. She liked the parents very much, and she knew she'd just bored the husband silly while she and the wife had an intense conversation about the most flattering types of wrap dresses, so she owed it to the poor man to keep listening. The problem was, she really had nothing to say about bathroom renovations, and although she agreed it must have been terrible when they ran out of tiles, and that particular line was discontinued, and they only needed 3 more tiles to finish, she was sure it probably all worked out in the end. And she could see Celeste and Jane out on the balcony, and they were laughing with Bonnie and Nathan, which was unacceptable. Celeste and Jane were her friends. She looked about for someone else to take her place and grabbed Samantha. Her husband was a plumber. She must surely have an interest in bathroom renovations.
You've got to hear this story, she said. Can you imagine? They, ran out of tiles.
Oh, no, that exact same thing happened to me, said Samantha.
Bingo. Madeline left Samantha listening intently and eagerly awaiting her turn to tell her own bathroom renovation disaster story. Good Lord. It was a mystery to her how anyone could find that more interesting than wrap dresses. As she made her way through the crowd, she passed a group of 4 blonde bobs huddled together so close it was obvious they were sharing something scandalous. She paused to listen.
The French nanny. That funny-looking girl. Didn't Renata fire her? Yes, because she totally missed the fact that Amabella was being bullied by that Ziggy kid. What's happening with the petition, by the way? We're going to submit it to Mrs. Lippman on Monday. Have you seen the mother tonight? She's had her hair cut. She's flitting about like she hasn't got a care in the world. If my kid were a bully, I wouldn't be out showing my face, that's for sure. I'd be at home with my child, giving him the attention he obviously needs. Needs a good smack is what he needs. I hear she was bringing him to school with nits yesterday. I am just gobsmacked that the school let it go on for as long as it did. In this day and age, when there is so much information about bullying...
Right, right. But the point is, Renata's nanny is having an affair with Jeff.
Why would she want to have an affair with Jeff? I know it for a fact.
Madeline felt enraged on Jane's behalf, and strangely enough, on behalf of Renata too, even though Renata had presumably approved the petition.
You are awful people, she said loudly.
The blonde Bobs looked up. Their eyes and mouths were little ovals of surprise.
You are awful, awful people.
She kept walking without waiting to hear their reactions. As she slid back the door to go out onto the balcony, she found Renata behind her.
Just getting some fresh air, said Renata. It's getting so stuffy in here.
Yes, said Madeline. And it looks like it stopped raining. They stepped out together into the night air.
I've contacted my insurance company, by the way, about the car.
Renata winced.
I'm sorry I made such a fuss yesterday.
Well, I'm sorry for running into you. I was busy yelling at Abigail.
I got a fright, said Renata. When I get frightened, I lash out. It's a flaw.
They walked over toward the group near the railing.
Really? Said Madeline. How terrible for you. I have a very placid personality myself.
Renata snorted.
Maddie, said Nathan. Haven't seen you yet tonight. How are you? I hear my wife spilled her drink all over you.
He must be a bit drunk too, thought Madeline. He wouldn't normally refer to Bonnie as his wife in front of her.
Luckily, it was a pink drink. So it matched my dress, said Madeline.
I've been celebrating the happy ending to our daughter's little drama, said Nathan. Here's to Larry Fitzgerald of South Dakota, eh?
He lifted his drink.
Said Madeline. Her eyes were on Celeste. I have this funny feeling that Larry Fitzgerald might actually live closer than we think.
Eh? Said Nathan. What are you talking about?
Are you talking about Abigail's website? Said Celeste. Did she close it down?
Her delivery was absolutely perfect, thought Madeline. And that's what gave it away. Most of the time, Celeste looked evasive, as though she had something to hide. Right now, she looked completely composed and poised, and her eyes held Madeline's. When most people lied, they avoided eye contact. When Celeste lied, she held it.
You're Larry Fitzgerald of South Dakota, aren't you? Said Madeline to Celeste.
I knew it. Well, I didn't know it for sure, but I had a feeling it was all too convenient.
I have absolutely no idea what you're talking about, said Celeste evenly.
Nathan turned to Celeste.
You gave $100,000 to Amnesty? To help us? My God.
You really shouldn't have, said Madeline. You shouldn't have done that. How can we ever repay you?
Goodness, said Renata. What is this all about?
I don't know what you're talking about, said Celeste to Madeline. But don't forget, you saved Max's life. So that's a debt that really can't be repaid.
There were some raised voices from inside the hall.
I wonder what's going on, said Nathan.
Oh, I might have started some little fires, said Renata with a tiny smile. My husband isn't the only one who thinks he's in love with our nanny. Juliet found much to distract her in Pirouette. What's the French word for it?
Polyamour.
I found out she had an eye for a certain type of man. Or, I should say, a certain type of bank account.
Renata, said Celeste, I found out tonight that...
Don't, said Jane,
My son, Max, was the one who was hurting Amabella, said Celeste.
Your son? Said Renata. But are you sure? Because on orientation day, Amabella pointed out Ziggy.
I'm quite sure, said Celeste. She picked out Ziggy at random because she was frightened of Max.
But
Renata couldn't seem to get her head around it.
You're sure?
I'm quite sure, said Celeste. And I'm sorry. Renata put a hand to her mouth.
Amabella didn't want me to invite the twins to her A party, she said. She made such a fuss about it, and I just ignored her. I thought she was being silly.
She looked at Jane. Jane looked steadily back. She really did look wonderful tonight, thought Madeline with satisfaction. And she realized that the constant gum chewing had stopped sometime over the last few weeks without her noticing.
I owe you a very big apology, said Renata.
You do, said Jane.
And Ziggy, said Renata. I owe you and your son an apology. I am so sorry. I don't know what I'll do.
I accept, said Jane. She lifted her glass. I accept your apology.
The glass door slid open yet again, and Ed and Perry appeared.
Things are getting a bit out of hand in there, said Ed.
He grabbed some bar stools that had been lined up near the door and brought them over.
Shall we make ourselves comfortable? Hello, Renata. I'm very sorry about my wife's lead foot on the accelerator yesterday.
Perry brought some stools over as well.
Perry, said Renata.
Madeline noticed she wasn't quite as obsequious toward Perry now that she knew his son had been bullying her daughter. In fact, there was a definite edge to her voice.
Nice to see you in the country.
Thanks, Renata. Nice to see you too.
Nathan held out his hand.
Perry, is it? I don't think we've met. I'm Nathan. I understand we're very much in your debt.
Really?
Said Perry.
How is that?
Oh, Jesus, Nathan, thought Madeline. Shut up. He doesn't know. I bet he doesn't know.
Perry, this is Bonnie, interrupted Celeste. And this is Jane. She's Ziggy's mother.
Madeline met Celeste's eyes. She knew they were both thinking about Perry's cousin. The secret hung in the air between them like an evil, amorphous cloud.
Pleasure to meet you both.
Perry shook their hands and with courtly gestures offered seats to the women.
Apparently, you and your wife donated $100,000 to Amnesty International to help our daughter out of a spot,
gabbled on Nathan. He was twirling his Elvis wig around in his hand, and it suddenly flew off and over the balcony and into the darkness.
Oh, shit,
he looked over the balcony. I'll lose my deposit at the shop. Perry removed his own black Elvis wig.
They do get a bit itchy after a while, he said.
He ruffled his hair with his fingertips, so he looked boyishly rumpled, and sat himself up on a bar stool, his back to the balcony. He looked very tall up on the bar stool, with the sky clearing behind him, clouds backlit by the moonlight from an emerging full moon, like a magical gold disc. Somehow, they'd formed a semicircle around Perry, as though he were their leader.
"What's this about donating $100,000? He said. "Is this another one of my wife's secrets? She's a surprisingly secretive woman, my wife. Very secretive. Just look at that Mona Lisa smile of hers."
Madeline looked at Celeste. She was sitting on her bar stool with her long legs crossed, her hands folded in her lap. She was completely still. She looked like she was carved out of stone, a sculpture of a beautiful woman. She'd turned slightly, so she was looking away from Perry. Was she breathing? Was she all right? Madeline felt her heart speed up. Something was falling into place, pieces of a puzzle forming a picture, answers to questions she didn't know she had. The perfect marriage. The perfect life. Except Celeste was always so flustered, a little fidgety, a little edgy.
"She also seems to think we have unlimited financial resources," said Perry. "Doesn't earn a cent herself, but sure knows how to spend it."
"Hey now," said Renata sharply, as if she were remonstrating a child.
"I think we've already met," said Jane to Perry. Nobody heard her, except for Madeline. Jane had remained standing while everyone else perched up on their bar stools. She looked tiny in the middle of them, like a child addressing Perry. She had to tip back her head. Her eyes were very big. She cleared her throat and spoke again. "I think we've already met."
Perry glanced at her. "Really? Are you sure?"
He smiled his charming smile.
"I'm sorry. I don't recall."
"I'm sure," said Jane. "Except you said your name was Saxon Banks."
Chapter 76. At first his face was completely neutral. Friendly. "This is of no relevance to me," polite. He didn't recognize her.
"I wouldn't know her from a bar of soap."
The cheery phrase popped inappropriately into her head. Something her mum would say. But when she said, "Saxon Banks," there was a flicker. Not because he recognized her. He still had no idea, couldn't even be bothered to go to the effort of dredging up the appropriate memory. But because he understood who she must be, what she represented. She was one of many. He'd lied about his name. It had never occurred to her that he would do that. As if your name could not be fabricated, even though you could fabricate your personality, fabricate your attention.
"I kept thinking I might run into you," she said to him.
"Perry?" said Celeste.
Perry turned to her. His face was naked again, like in the car, as though something had been ripped away. Ever since Madeline had first mentioned Saxon's name on the night of the book club, there had been something niggling at Celeste. A memory from before the children were born, before Perry hit her for the first time. That memory slid into place now, fully intact, as though it had just been waiting for her to retrieve it. It was Perry's cousin's wedding. The one where Saxon and Perry had driven all the way back to the church to collect Eleni's mobile phone. They were sitting at a round table. White starched tablecloth. Giant bows tied around the chairs. Light hitting the wine glasses. Saxon and Perry were telling stories. Stories of a shared suburban childhood, homemade billy carts, and the time Saxon saved Perry from the bullies at school. And what about the time when Perry brazenly stole a banana paddle pop from the freezer at the fish and chip shop, and the big, scary Greek man grabbed him by the scruff of his neck in one big, beefy hand and said, "What's your name?" And Perry said, "Saxon Banks." The fish and chip shop owner called Saxon's mother and said, "Your son stole from me." And Saxon's mother said, "My son is right here," and hung up on him. So funny. So cheeky. How they'd laughed while they drank their champagne. "It didn't mean anything," said Perry to Celeste. There was a hollow, roaring sensation in her ears, as though she were deep underwater. Jane watched Perry turn away from her to look at his wife, instantly dismissing her, without even bothering to remember or acknowledge her. She'd never really existed to him. She was of no consequence in his life. He was married to a beautiful woman. Jane was pornography. Jane was the adult movie that didn't appear on his hotel bill. Jane was internet porn, where every fetish can be fulfilled. You have a fetish for humiliating fat girls? Enter your credit card bill and click right here. "That's why I moved to Pirui," said Jane. "Just in case you were here." The glass bubble elevator. The muffled, dimly lit hotel room. She remembered how she'd looked around the room, casually, pleasurably, for more evidence of the sort of man he was. More evidence of his money and style. More evidence to indicate that this would be a delightfully lavish one-night stand. There wasn't much to see. A closed laptop. An upright overnight bag standing neatly in the corner. Next to the laptop, there was a real estate leaflet. "For sale." A picture of an ocean view. "Luxury family home overlooking the glorious Pirui Peninsula." "Are you buying this house?" she'd said.
"Probably," he answered.
He was pouring her champagne. "Do you have kids?" she asked, recklessly, stupidly. "It seems like a good house for children." She never asked about a wife. No ring. There was no ring.
"No kids," he said. "One day I'd like kids."
She'd seen something on his face. A sadness, a desperate sort of yearning. And she had thought, in all her idiotic naivety, that she knew exactly what that sadness indicated. He'd just been through a breakup. Of course he had. He was just like her, nursing a broken heart. He was desperate to find the right woman and start a family, and maybe she was even moronic enough to think, as he smiled his devastatingly attractive smile and handed her the champagne glass, that she might turn out to be that woman. Stranger things had happened. And then stranger things did happen. Over the years that followed, she reacted viscerally to the words Pirui Peninsula in conversation or in print. She changed the subject. She turned the page. Then one day, without warning, she did the exact opposite. She told Ziggy they were going to the beach, and they drove to the glorious Pirui Peninsula. And all the way there, she tried to pretend that she didn't even remember that real estate leaflet, even as she remembered it over and over. They played on the beach, and she looked over his shoulder for a man coming out of the surf with a white-toothed smile. She listened for the sound of a wife calling out the name, "Saxon!"
What did she want?
Revenge?
Recognition. To show him she was skinny now? To hit him. To hurt him. To report him. To say all the things she should have said instead of her bovine bye. To somehow let him know that he hadn't gotten away with it, even though of course he had. She wanted him to see Ziggy. She wanted him to marvel at his beautiful, serious, intense little boy. It made no sense. It was such a stupid, strange, weird and wrong desire, she refused to properly acknowledge it. And sometimes she flatly denied it. Because how would this moment of magical, fatherly marveling possibly work? Oh, hi there. Remember me? I had a son. Here he is. No, no, of course I don't want a relationship with you, but I do just want you to stand for a moment and marvel over your son. He loves pumpkin. He's always loved pumpkin. Isn't that incredible? What kid loves pumpkin? He's shy and brave, and he has excellent balance. So there you go. You're a bastard and a prick and I hate you, but just look for a moment at your son, because isn't it the strangest thing? 10 minutes of depravity created something perfect. She told herself she'd taken Ziggy to Pirawee for the day and seen a flat for lease and, on a whim, she decided to move here. She pretended it so fiercely she almost believed it. And as the months went by and it seemed less and less likely that Saxon Banks lived here at all, it had become the truth. She stopped looking for him. When she told Madeline the story about the night at the hotel with Saxon, it hadn't even occurred to her to tell her that he was part of the reason she'd moved to Pirawee. It was preposterous and embarrassing. "You wanted to run into him," Madeline would have said, trying her best to understand. "You wanted to see that man." How could Jane explain that she did and she didn't want to see him? Anyway, she'd forgotten all about that real estate brochure. She had moved to Pirawee on a whim. And Saxon clearly wasn't here. But now, here he was. Celeste's husband. He must have been married to Celeste at the time he met Jane. "We had a really hard time getting pregnant with the boys," Celeste had told Jane once on one of their walks. That was why he looked sad when she mentioned children. Jane felt her face flush warm with humiliation in the cool night air. "It meant nothing," Perry said again to Celeste. "It meant something to her," said Celeste. It was his shrug that did it. The almost imperceptible shrug that said, "Who cares about her?" He thought this was about infidelity. He thought he'd been caught out in a garden variety, business executive goes on an interstate trip one night stand. He thought it was nothing to do with Jane. "I thought you were..." She couldn't speak. She thought he was kind. She thought he was a good person with a bad temper. She thought that his violence was something private and personal between them. She thought he wasn't capable of casual cruelty. He always spoke so nicely to waitresses, even the incompetent ones. She thought she knew him. "Let's talk about this at home," said Perry. "Let's not make a spectacle of ourselves." "You're not looking at her," whispered Celeste. "You're not even looking at her." She threw the contents of her half-full glass of champagne cocktail straight in his face. The champagne splashed across his face. Perry's right hand rose instantly, instinctively, gracefully. It was as though he were an athlete catching a ball, except he didn't catch anything. He hit Celeste with the back of his hand. His hand curved in a perfect, practiced, brutal arc that flung back her head and sent her body flying across the balcony, where she fell, clumsily and hard, on her side. The air rushed from Madeline's lungs. Ed sprang to his feet so fast, his bar stool tipped over. "Whoa! Whoa there!" Madeline rushed to Celeste's side and dropped to her knees. My God, are you... I'm fine, said Celeste. She pressed her hand to her face and half sat up. I'm perfectly fine. Madeline looked back at the little circle of people on the balcony. Ed stood with his arms held wide, one hand up like a stop sign directed at Perry, the other held protectively in front of Celeste. Jane's glass had slipped from her fingers and shattered at her feet. Renata rummaged through her handbag. I'm calling the police, she said. I'm calling the police right now. That's assault. I just witnessed you assaulting your wife. Nathan had his hand on Bonnie's elbow. As Madeline watched, she shook his hand free. She was blazing with passion, as though lit from within. You've done that before, she said to Perry. Perry ignored Bonnie. His eyes were on Renata, who had her phone to her ear. Okay, let's not get ahead of ourselves, he said. That's why your son has been hurting little girls, said Bonnie. It was that same rough-edged voice Madeline had heard her use earlier in the night, except it was even more pronounced now. She sounded so... Well, she sounded like she came from the wrong side of town, as Madeline's mother would say. She sounded like a drinker, a smoker, a fighter. She sounded real. It was strangely exhilarating to hear that guttural, angry voice coming out of Bonnie's mouth, because he's seen what you do. Your little boy has seen you do that, hasn't he? Perry exhaled. Look, I don't know what you're implying. My children haven't seen anything. Your children see, screamed Bonnie. Her face was ugly with rage. We see. We fucking see. She shoved him, both her small hands flat on his chest. He fell. Chapter 77. If Perry had been just a few inches shorter. If the balcony railing had been just a few inches higher. If the bar stool had been at a slightly different angle. If it hadn't been raining. If he hadn't been drinking. Afterward, Madeline could not stop thinking of all the ways it could have happened differently. But it happened the way that it happened. Celeste saw the expression on Perry's face when Bonnie screamed at him. It was the same mildly amused face as when Celeste lost her temper with him. He liked it when women got angry with him. He liked getting a reaction. He thought it was cute. She saw his hand grab for the railing and slip. She saw him flip back, his legs high, like he was romping on the bed with the boys. And then he was gone, without making a sound. An empty space, where he'd been. It all happened too fast. Jane's mind was dull with shock. As she groped for comprehension, she became aware that there was a commotion going on inside the hall. Yells, bangs, thuds.
Jesus Christ almighty, said Ed. He leaned over the balcony railing, both hands gripping the edge, peering over the edge, his gold Elvis cape stretched out behind him like foolish little wings. Bonnie had sunk down onto her haunches, her body curved into a ball, her hands clasped tightly over the back of her head, as though she were waiting for a bomb to explode.
No, 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 no.
Nathan took little agitated steps, dancing around his wife, bending to touch her back, and then straightening up and pressing his hands to his temples. Ed spun round.
I'll go see if he's...
Ed, said Renata. She dropped the hand holding her mobile phone by her side. The balcony light reflected off her glasses.
Call an ambulance, barked Ed.
Yes, said Renata, I am. I will. But, I didn't see what happened. I didn't see him fall.
What? Said Ed.
Madeline was still on her knees next to Celeste. Jane saw Madeline look straight past Ed at her ex-husband. Nathan's hair was all sweaty from the wig and stuck to his forehead. He looked at Madeline with distraught, pleading eyes. Madeline looked back at Celeste, who was staring catatonically at the place where Perry had been sitting.
I don't think I saw either, said Madeline.
Madeline, said Ed. He pulled angrily at his costume, as if he longed to tear it off. The glitter was coming off onto his hands, turning his palms gold.
Do not...
I was looking the other way, said Madeline. Her voice was stronger. She got to her feet, holding her tiny clutch bag in front of her, her back straight and her chin high, as if she were about to walk into a ballroom.
I was looking inside. I didn't see.
Jane cleared her throat. She thought of the way Saxon, Perry, had said, it didn't mean anything. She looked at Bonnie, cowering near an upturned barstool. She felt hot liquid anger suddenly cool and harden into something powerful and immovable.
So was I, she said. I didn't see anything either. Stop this!
Ed glanced at her and back at Madeline.
All of you, stop it!
Celeste reached for Madeline's hand and pulled herself gracefully to her feet. She straightened her dress and pressed one hand to her face, where Perry had hit her. She looked for a moment at the curled-up form of Bonnie. I didn't see a thing, she said, and her voice sounded almost conversational.
Celeste!
Ed's face crumpled as though in terror. He pressed his hands hard against his temples and then dropped them. His forehead sparkled gold. Celeste walked to the edge of the balcony and put her hands on the railing. She looked back at Renata and said, call the ambulance now. Then she began to scream. It was easy after all those years of pretending. Celeste was a fine actress. But then she thought of her children. And she didn't need to pretend anymore.
Stew. All hell had broken loose by this stage. Two blokes were fighting over some French chick. And next thing, this four-foot weasel is laying into me because I'd said his wife couldn't organise a route in a brothel and I'd offended her honour or something. I mean, jeez Louise, it's just an expression.
Thea.
It's true the argument over standardized testing got a little heated. I have four children, so I do lay claim to some expertise in the matter. Harper, Thea was sounding like a fishwife. Jonathan, I was with some year four parents, and we got into an argument over the legality and morality of that damned petition. There were some raised voices. Maybe some shoving. Look, I'm not proud of any of this. Jackie, give me a vicious corporate takeover any day. Gabrielle, I was considering cannibalism by this time. Carol looked delicious. Carol, I was cleaning the kitchen when I heard the most terrible, blood-curdling scream. Samantha, Ed came running for the stairs, and he was shouting something about Perry White falling off the balcony, and would someone, for the love of God, call an ambulance? I looked over at the balcony and saw two Year 5 dads go crashing out through the open door. There's been an accident, Renata was saying into her mobile phone. She had one finger plugged into her ear so she could hear the person on the other end over the sound of Celeste's screams. A man has fallen from a balcony. It was him? Madeline took Jane's arm and pulled her close. It was Perry who... Jane stared at the perfect pink Cupid's bow of Madeline's lipstick. Two perfect peaks. Do you think he's... She never got to finish her sentence, because that's when the two grappling white satin Elvises, their arms wrapped tightly around each other's backs as if in a passionate embrace, slammed violently into Jane and Madeline, sending them flying in opposite directions. As Jane fell, she put one hand out to save herself and felt something snap with sickening wrongness near her shoulder as she landed hard on her side. The tiles of the balcony were wet against Jane's cheek. Celeste's screams mingled with the far-off sounds of ambulances and the soft sound of Bonnie sobbing. Jane could taste blood in her mouth. She closed her eyes. Oh, calamity. Bonnie. The fighting spilled out onto the balcony, and that's when poor Madeline and Jane got so badly injured. I didn't see Perry White fall. Would you excuse me for just a moment, Sarah? Oh, wait, it is Sarah, isn't it? Not Susan? My mind went blank. Sorry, Sarah. Sarah. A lovely name. It means princess, I think. Listen, Sarah, I need to pick my daughter up now. Chapter 78. The morning after the trivia night. Detective Sergeant Adrian Quinlan. We're looking at any available CCTV footage, photos taken on the night, and mobile phone footage. Obviously, we'll be studying the forensic evidence when it becomes available. We're currently in the process of interviewing every one of the 132 parents who attended the event. Rest assured, we will find out the truth about exactly what took place last night, and I'll charge the bloody lot of them if I have to. I don't think I can do it, said Ed quietly. He was sitting on a chair next to Madeline's hospital bed. She had a private room, but Ed kept looking nervously over his shoulder. He looked like he was seasick. I'm not asking you to do anything, said Madeline. If you want to tell, tell. Tell? For God's sake! Ed rolled his eyes. This isn't snitching to the teacher. This is breaking the law. This is lying under... Are you okay? Are you in pain?
Madeline closed her eyes and winced. Her ankle was broken. It happened when the two Year 5 dads crashed into her and Jane. At first, she thought she wouldn't fall, but then it seemed like it happened in slow motion. One of her legs slid behind the other one on the wet balcony, as though she were doing a fancy dance move. It was her good ankle, too, not the one that kept rolling. She had to lie there on the wet balcony last night in excruciating pain for what seemed like hours while Celeste screamed that awful, endless scream. And Bonnie sobbed, and Nathan swore, and Jane lay on her side with blood on her face, and Renata yelled at the fighting Year 5 dads to grow up for God's sake! Madeline was scheduled for surgery this afternoon. She would be in a cast for 4 to 6 weeks, and after that, there would be physiotherapy. It would be a long time before she'd be in stilettos again. She wasn't the only one who had ended up in the hospital. As Madeline understood it, the final tally this morning of injuries from the trivia night were one broken ankle, Madeline's contribution, one broken collarbone, poor Jane, broken nose, Renata's husband Jeff, less than he deserved, 3 cracked ribs, Harper's husband Graham, who had also been sleeping with the French nanny, 3 black eyes, 2 nasty cuts requiring stitches, and 94 splitting headaches. And 1 death. Madeline's head swirled with a violent merry-go-round of images from the previous night. Jane, with her bright red lipstick, standing in front of Perry and saying, "You said your name was Saxon Banks." At first, Madeline had thought she had the two men mixed up, that Perry must resemble his cousin, until Perry said, "It didn't mean anything." The look on Celeste's face after Perry hit her. No surprise at all. Just embarrassment. What sort of an obtuse, self-absorbed friend had Madeline been to have missed something like that? Just because Celeste didn't walk around nursing black eyes and split lips didn't mean there hadn't been clues if she'd just bothered to notice them. Had Celeste ever tried to confide in her? Madeline had probably been rattling on about eye cream or something equally superficial and hadn't given her the opportunity. She'd probably interrupted her. Ed was always calling her out on that. "Let me finish," he'd say, holding up a hand. Just 3 little words. "Perry hits me." And Madeline had never given her friend the 3 seconds it took to say them. Meanwhile, Celeste had listened while Madeline had talked endlessly about everything from how much she hated the under-7 soccer coordinator to her feelings about Abigail's relationship with her father. "She brought a round of vegetarian lasagna for us today," said Ed. "Who?" said Madeline. Regret was making her nauseous. "Bonnie! For God's sake, Bonnie! The woman we're apparently protecting." She was just bizarrely normal, as if nothing happened. She's completely nuts. She's already been talking this morning to a very nice journalist called Sarah. God knows what she's been saying. "It was an accident," said Madeline. She remembered Bonnie's face disfigured with rage as she screamed at Perry. That strange, guttural voice. "We see. We fucking see." "I know it was an accident," said Ed. "So why don't we just say the truth? Tell the police exactly what happened. I don't get it. You don't even like her." "That's not relevant," said Madeline. "It was Renata who started it," said Ed. "And then everyone else jumped on board. I didn't see. I didn't see. We didn't even know if the man was dead or alive, and we were already planning the cover-up. I mean, Jesus, does Renata even know Bonnie?"
Madeline thought she understood why Renata had said what she said. It was because Perry had cheated on Celeste, like Jeff cheated on Renata. Madeline had seen the expression on Renata's face when Perry said it didn't mean anything. At that moment, Renata had wanted to shove Perry off the balcony herself. Bonnie just got there first. If Renata hadn't said, "I didn't see him fall," then perhaps Madeline's mind wouldn't have moved fast enough to even consider the consequences for Bonnie. But as soon as Renata said what she did, Madeline had thought of Bonnie's daughter. That fluttering thing Skye did with her eyelashes, the way she always hid behind her mother's skirt. If ever there was a child who needed her mother, it was Skye. And maybe it was more than that. Maybe it was actually an unspoken instant agreement between the four women on the balcony. No woman should pay for the accidental death of that particular man. Maybe it was an involuntary, atavistic response to thousands of years of violence against women. Maybe it was for every rape, every brutal backhanded slap, every other Perry that had come before this one. "Bonnie has a little girl," said Madeline. "Perry had two little boys, so what?" said Ed. He looked off to a space above Madeline's bed. His face was haggard in the harsh single light. She could see the old man he'd one day be. "I just don't know if I can live with this, Madeline." He was the first one to get to Perry. He was the one who saw the broken, twisted body of a man who had just moments before been talking and laughing with him about golf handicaps. It was too much to ask of him. She knew this. "Perry was not a good person," said Madeline. "He's the one who did those things to Jane. Did you get that? He's Ziggy's father."
"That's not relevant," said Ed.
"It's up to you," said Madeline. Ed was right. Of course he was right. He was always right. But sometimes doing the wrong thing was also right.
"Do you think she meant to kill him?" she asked. "I don't. But so what? I'm not judge and jury. It's not my job to..."
"Do you think she'll do it again? Do you think she's a danger to society?"
"No. But again, so what?"
He gave her a look of genuine anguish.
"I just don't think I can knowingly lie in a police investigation."
"Haven't you already?" She knew he'd spoken to the police briefly last night before he came to the hospital, as she'd been taken off in one of the three ambulances that had pulled up in the kiss-and-drop zone out in front of the school.
"Not officially," said Ed. "Some officer wrote down a few notes, and I said..." "Oh God, I don't really know what I said. I was drunk. I didn't mention Bonnie, I know that. But at 1 o'clock this afternoon, I've agreed to go down to the police station and give an official witness statement. They'll tape it, Madeline. They'll have two officers sitting in a room looking at me while I knowingly lie. I'll have to sign an affidavit. That makes me an accessory..." "Hey there."
It was Nathan, charging into the room, holding a big bunch of flowers and smiling a big, wide celebrity smile, as if he were a motivational speaker walking onto a stage.
Ed jumped. "Jesus Christ, Nathan, you scared the life out of me."
"Sorry, mate," said Nathan. "How are you, Maddie?"
"I'm fine," said Madeline. There was something unsettling about having your husband and your ex-husband standing next to each other looking down at you while you lay in bed. It was weird. She wished they would both leave.
There you go. Poor girl. Nathan dumped the flowers on her lap. I hear